Welcome to Backpacker Radio, episode number 6. We are recording here at Wayfinder in the Santa Fe district of Denver. To my right, I am joined by...
Oh, hello. I'm Juliana Chauncey.
Hey, Chaunce. Hey. I should introduce myself. I'm Zach Bager.
This is the second time you've done that.
Maybe I should just get a new trail name because this is my Freudian slip saying that it's not working.
This is the curse of picking your own trail name.
The good Bager.
Good Bager.
I did go to school in Wisconsin for 4 years, so that would explain why I talk strange. But I just want to jump right into the episode today.
All right, jump on in.
We're here joined by our guest, a fellow Goldenite, a serial thru-hiker, a mountaineer, and he's about to leave for a kick-ass adventure. Stephen Twinkle Shaddock?
Shaddock.
Shaddock. Just jump right into it. Give us the backpacking resume.
All right. Started young. My parents took me out a lot. Moved to Colorado right after college and started hitting the long trails. Did some of the smaller ones to start, like most people, long trail, John Muir Trail, Colorado Trail, and then worked my way up to the bigger three, the Triple Crown. So
long trail's 300 miles?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah, through Vermont.
Were you hooked right away?
Yeah, right away hooked. I think the freedom was just great. Yeah. Fantastic.
What were you doing before that?
Going to school.
Yeah. So you went straight from school to the long trail.
Yeah, pretty much, right? You know, summers in college, went a few years in a row doing those.
And how much research did you do before going into this? Were you, because, you know, you probably know the story, but a lot of people that go into the AT first, like for me, it was my first backpacking trip ever. Chaunce did the PCT first.
And wait, you hiked the AT?
I know, 2011. People, our listeners love that story.
I think they really enjoy it.
Let's see. Maybe take a drink every time I reference that.
Number one.
That was the first one.
That was so loud.
We're gonna get very drunk here. So I hiked the AT in 2011. All right. So you went from school straight to the long trail.
Yep.
So how much research and like how much prep work? What kind of backpacking experience did you have prior to that?
Yeah, I'd say I'm very type A, so I did a ton of research. You know, I took off the lid of my standard backpack and thought I was pretty UL in doing so.
I mean, I think that puts you ahead of the curve for a lot of first-time through hikers.
Yeah, first time. I mean,
What was your first backpack?
My buddies and I did a Zion Traverse back in 2007.
I meant like the physical pack itself, but that's a good bit of information.
That'd be a good name for a backpack. This is my Zion Traverse.
I had an Osprey, right? Uh-huh. Doesn't everybody? I feel like everybody starts with an Osprey or JanSport. It'd be a lot cooler if I started with a JanSport.
When I did the AC, take another drink. Gregory was also a big name. Dare I say bigger? I don't know if I had seen any stats on it, but I think, you know, anecdotally speaking, I saw more Gregory packs than Osprey packs.
Have you met him, Gregory?
I have not. Wayne Gregory in Utah, right?
Is that it?
I think so. Because if you call their phone number, it's like a voice recording, and I'm pretty sure it's his voice.
You just get his answering machine at home.
Yeah, he's at home.
Hi, this is Wayne Gregory. Yeah,
Gregory used to kill shit, and now they're nowhere to be found. Man, what a fall from grace.
I was hoping it was his first name.
Gregory.
Greg.
What if it was Gregory Gregory?
Oh, that'd be good.
From Utah.
All right, so just give us the quick chronological order of the trails that you've hiked.
Sure, yeah. I did the John Muir Trail, then the Long Trail, then the Colorado Trail back to back in the same summer. And that was pretty nice. And that's when I was really hooked. I did the John Muir Trail again the next year and then took a few summers off. You know, I was in college, you know, doing internships in the summer and then started a career and knew that if I worked a few years in my career, I could probably take a sabbatical, given my profession. So that's what I did. And then,
what's your profession?
I was working at a big four CPA firm.
Gotcha.
So account auditing.
Yeah. Sold your soul to the devil.
I did. Yeah.
And the devil now pays for your adventuring. Works
that's,
out.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I cut you off. Was that the full list?
That was the full list. Yeah. Until the PCT and then the AT, I did those together. I did most of the AT. I'm not a thru hiker of the AT. I started in New Hampshire and finished in Georgia. So I still have Maine left to do.
Got you.
And then the next summer I took another sabbatical and did most of the CDT, but not all of it.
Where did you get off on the CDT?
You know, my buddy and I bounced around a bit. We were going northbound. and the guy I was hiking with, we stopped when we hit the Idaho border in Yellowstone, and then we skipped ahead and did the Bob, and then there was a fire in Glacier, so we skipped that and went up to Banff. So I got it. I've done the Glacier section, but I need to piece together from Yellowstone to the entrance of the Bob.
Gotcha. So you've got pieces of the CDT and the AT?
Correct.
Does that eat away at you, knowing that there's just like a little bit of meat left on the bone?
not really, no. I think a lot of people, it definitely would. You know, there is like, oh, I'm not a triple crowner.
Yeah.
Definitely not. But I think I really wanted to go back and do Maine. I don't know that I have the desire to go hike Idaho, Montana border.
Yeah.
Some people may scoff at that, but from what I've heard, it's all right.
Sure. Well, good on you, because it sounds like you're doing it for the experience as opposed to the notch on your belt.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So
how did you get into hiking? Like, one day you just decided to do the JMT, and then, like, it was downhill from there?
Growing up, how was it? Yeah, you know, very outdoor-centric family. Growing up in Michigan, we'd always take trips out west, so I kind of dreamed of going back out west. And then my mom got sick, actually, and one of her dreams was if she got better, she wanted to do the John Muir Trail. So when she was sick and going through chemo and stuff, she had this John Muir Trail book, and that's kind of what inspired me to go do it. So kind of beat her to the punch.
That's awesome.
She's still got on the list, though. She's still kicking and got the John Muir Trail on.
I was
going
to ask, but I didn't want to take it to it.
Yeah. So she's better now, and I'm sure she'll do it in the next few years.
Nice. Are you going to do it with her?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
we'll see.
My mom's gotten the idea. I don't know if I told you this, but when I went home for Christmas, my mom had the idea that she wants to hike the AT in 2019.
With you?
Yeah, that's one of her stipulations.
That is a very long trail to do with a parent.
I've told her that.
Have you guys backpacked it all together?
No, she went on a 3-mile hike this summer.
Yeah.
But I think that's...
If you just do that 700 times, you've done
right.
The AT.
There you go. That's all you need.
She's got 1/700th of it down.
There you go.
All right. So I got to ask. Tomorrow, you're leaving on a crazy adventure for potentially a year or longer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right after I finished the CDT, I started a job outside of the CPA firm. Knew I couldn't take another sabbatical year after year doing this. And I also met my now wife, and things were escalating quickly there. So hot and heavy. Oh yeah.
What's up, Grace?
Shout out to Grace. So we were actually, once we were engaged, we were out with a buddy of mine, Eli. We were climbing the second Flatiron in Boulder, and my buddy Eli was telling us all about, oh yeah, I'm hiking the PCT again this coming summer. And this was in the spring about 2 years ago. And I was just like, oh man, it's only been 6 months. I'm already jonesing for another time off, another time on trail, and knew it wasn't in the cards for the next summer or two. So I popped the question to Grace, got on one knee and said, would you take a summer off with me? And her response was, why just a summer? And I was like, bam, nailed it.
So you proposed after the second Flatiron?
I didn't actually propose.
Oh, I was going to say that would have been
proposed
amazing.
A year off.
Yeah, sure.
Or I mean,
that's more important, I think.
Right.
At least amongst hiker trash.
Second most important question I ever asked her, right?
Will you take extended time off with me? Okay. So you've been saving for how long?
Just about 2 years now. Yeah.
2 years. Wow. And you're leaving tomorrow.
Leaving tomorrow. Yeah. We went home right after that and started. Yeah. Type A, cranking some numbers and seeing what we needed to do, backing into how long do we have to meet our savings goal to be able to take that amount of time off. And
so where are you going? Have you figured any of that out?
Yeah, so we're going to work tomorrow, right. Going to work tomorrow and then leaving right from there to Moab, start caching our food for a few days.
That's going
to
be the least productive day of work of all time.
Yeah, I pretty much have an exit interview with my boss and I'm going to bounce.
You just think back to middle school, the last day of school. Like,
and you're just like antsy.
Yeah, no.
Oh, it's so exciting.
It's the equivalent of giving a bunch of kids meth.
You're going to be so unproductive tomorrow.
Yeah, don't tell my boss.
I'm sure he knows.
Yeah.
So you're leaving tomorrow. You're going to the Hayduke.
Yep, that's first on our list is the Hayduke Trail, something I've always wanted to do. I think setting yourself up for a full year plus of travel why not just kick your ass right away?
Yeah.
I think the Hey Duke will definitely do that for both of us.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, after you had decided that you were going to do this adventure, that you went home and started crunching numbers. And it made me think back to the Oregon Trail, where you get to decide what profession you are before you go into the trail. Like, having being a doctor, like, you know, you're less likely to get whatever gonorrhea, I forget what the diseases were, but I feel like gonorrhea was most of them. Being a CPA has got to be, you're not going to fail due to a lack of budgeting.
No. That's a
good skill to have as a thru hiker for sure.
It helps, especially if you're a chronic thru hiker. I feel like it's easy to do one thru hike.
Right.
You start trying to do back to back or every other year, and you got to really get the money part of it down
for
to be
sure
able to do it.
Yeah, that does seem to be the common tempo, is to take a year off and restore the funds that you repleted during your hike.
Mm-hmm.
So to save for a year, maybe longer, that's quite an undertaking. So how are you making this all work? Because you're pretty much my neighbor. I know that, you know, you've got a couple cars, you own a home, you're tied down the same way that I think a lot of people listening to this are probably tied down. So there's got to be a lot of people wondering, how in the hell do you make this work?
Yeah. I think you really have to shift your focus in what you're doing in your everyday life to make every decision about that year off as far as a monetary decision. Start thinking towards the future and analyzing every decision you make. Should we get a dog? Should we buy this car? You know, should we go out to eat to lunch today? Even as small as that, right? So we've set aside goals. It's like, this is our monthly goal. I think that was a very easy way to break it down. Here's our monthly goal. Here's what we're going to try and save. And we opened up a savings account, started every month throwing our money in there that we had planned to save. And
so a lot of sacrifice.
Definitely. I mean, at first it felt pretty easy, and then you have unexpected costs roll in,
right?
And before you know it, you're eating ramen at night instead of going out with your buddies. Or
that's true prep work for the trail, right?
Yeah, meet everybody at the brewery and get water.
Yeah.
So
how much did you, because you said you budgeted for it, how much do you expect that you'll be spending like a month on, because you're going to be doing a lot of hiking and things, right?
Yeah. I think it's going to vary depending on what country we're in, what type of thing we're doing. If we're through hiking, are we peak bagging? Are we exploring cities, whatnot? We budgeted roughly $3,000 a month for the two of us combined.
Okay.
In total.
Yeah.
That's true dirt bagging right there.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
So speaking of peak bagging, I heard you guys talking about, you've done a bit of that out here.
Yeah. So, and that actually fits right in with how we saved money. We really refined the vacations we were taking and tried to live below our means. So you make X amount of money, you can spend X amount. We really cut that back, and in part that meant sticking locally with our vacations, which was a huge sacrifice in Colorado. Just not much to do around here on the weekends.
Yeah, no, you're
it's
really
a horrible place.
So that's what I was doing almost every weekend. I was driving out to the mountains and climbing. So I kind of set aside the goal. I like goals. I'm type A. I like working towards something. Just like any thru hiker likes working towards getting to Canada.
Totally.
Or getting to Katahdin, right? Like, that's your goal and that's what you're working for. So I knew not only was I saving for this, but I needed something to occupy me in the current. And my goal was always to climb the 100 highest peaks in Colorado. So every weekend I was getting out with buddies and getting out with Grace and, you know, doing the 14ers, doing the high 13ers, and seeing what the state has to offer, which is immense here in Colorado.
So how long did it take you to do all 100?
I started climbing in 2013. I did almost all the 14ers that first summer I was out here. I was like a kid on a sugar high. Like, oh my gosh, I have all this at my fingertips. It's my first year. I think a lot of people who move to Colorado do that. Like,
yeah.
Their head explodes their first summer they're here, and they're like, I need to do everything.
I was that way for sure.
Yeah, because it's so good. It's mm-hmm. so good here. The access is phenomenal. So I just started peak bagging with friends, started meeting people that way. And then I took the two summers off right after that to hike. And then I took another two summers. So basically three seasons.
Right.
Yeah, three summer seasons to get them.
Fun fact, Twinkle has no fear. And I know this because he took me on the single scariest day of anything I've done since I've been in Colorado, which is probably pathetic sounding.
Nah, that's scary. That's legit. No ropes and whatnot.
Right. So he was talking about where he realized that Grace was the one for him. They were climbing the second Flatiron. And you're telling me that you took me almost a year after that same date. That is one of the most terrifying things I've ever done. Like adventures.
You didn't bring ropes or anything?
Without any ropes. And it honestly looks like you're climbing vertically the entire time. And you totally undersold how terrifying it would be. Like, no, it's no big deal. My wife did it. I'm like, okay, cool.
I think I tricked myself into that one too because it had been a full year since I'd done it.
Yeah.
And the first time I did it, I was being led.
Right.
So my buddy Eli had done it over and over countless times, so he knew the route.
Right.
And I hadn't done it in a year, and I was like, oh, Zach, come on out. We'll climb this thing. It'll be no big deal. Not realizing, like, I don't have anybody guiding me. I got to figure out the route myself, too. So I think I got myself in over my head on that one.
Yeah, I got to say, and you did a really good job leading, too. Didn't make it any less terrifying, but I'm glad to be here to tell you how scared I was.
You've been back several times.
Right? Yeah, right. I will never go back. So this is the disclaimer to everyone listening. If you're thinking about climbing the second Flatiron in Boulder, do not do it.
It's, like, actually a climb, because I'm fact-checking you right now, because my buddy, the last time I went actually rock climbing, he was telling me that he had done the second Flatiron without a rope.
Yeah.
And I remembered he was telling me that it's like pretty much graded as a climb. Like there's roots of it that are like V7s for bouldering, but the rest of them are like 5.0s, 5.2, 5.6.
Yeah, so, I think it rates out at a 5.0.
Yeah.
If you're good at route finding, I don't know that I was the best that day.
For someone, Zach, you don't rock climb.
Yeah, I was going to say what you're saying right now is all gibberish to me. All I know is that every time I looked down, I saw my death. So,
yeah.
You were wearing Ultra Olympus, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
the extra padding. I know. No tread whatsoever. Can't feel anything because you're on a cloud.
Next time I'm bringing cleats. I don't know. Is that something climbers do?
Yeah, you should definitely bring cleats. Get the ones that have like the little spikes in them that the track runners use.
The metal spikes.
Oh, yeah, the metal spikes.
To a sharp point as well.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I don't see how that could go wrong.
Okay, so you're leaving tomorrow for this year-long, maybe longer adventure with your wife. I'm curious, how do you think this adventure will differ from the ones you've done without a significant other?
I mean, hugely, bigly,
bigly,
bigly, bigly.
Word of the day.
No, there's so much more for me to consider. I think, you know, in my through hiking heyday a few years ago, I would be considered reckless. A lot of the stuff I was doing, like, oh, that's stupid. You know what I mean? Like, I did the PCT without any rain gear. That's dumb. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's like, okay, well, I'm kind of testing myself. I didn't filter any water. That's dumb.
Let's back up. What did you do when it rained? Did you just get extremely lucky, or was your method just to hike really quickly when?
A bit of both. Okay. Yeah, just like young, dumb guy. Right?
Sure. And you went northbound, right?
Northbound, yeah. And we got a bunch of rain, and I ended up not getting a raincoat until halfway through Washington.
I was going to say Washington. I've talked to so many people that they need like two extra layers and very legit rain gear through the state. To do that without rain gear seems insane to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely got lucky. I had to, my thought was, let's hike fast. And if I get too cold, I'll just set up camp. And I had, you know, one or two experiences where I let myself get way too cold before trying to set up and had trouble setting up.
Right. But, can't use your hands.
Yeah. Can't use hands. But I took risks that I was comfortable with myself. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is probably dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get made fun of for this.
Yeah, is Grace that much of a thrill seeker?
No. Well, she's quite the badass in her own right. She does a lot of the gnarly 14ers and stuff with me. But
she did the second Flatiron. That's all. Like, she's more of a badass than I am by a lot.
Yeah, she did that really well too. I was shocked. I think I was way more scared than she was.
Yeah.
Just scared for her. Like, oh, I didn't know. I'd never done it. I was like, oh, yeah, Grace, come with me. I got my buddy.
Right. Whew. And you know, after meeting her, I was relieved because I'm like, she does not seem like the thrill seeker. She's a sweet Southern girl, like the last person you'd expect to be a thrill seeker. But you know, she's badass.
She is, yeah. But I mean, those things, I can't take those risks with her. I don't filter any of my water. I just get Giardia and I'm fine with it.
You still don't treat your water?
No.
Is that going to change for the upcoming treks?
Definitely. I think I would even if it was just myself nowadays.
Got you. How many times have you gotten Giardia?
I'm just a carrier, right? So like 75% of the human population has Giardia in their carriers and they're fine with it. Americans are wimpy. We drink tap water. We grow up with it. Well, so we can't handle it. So I just have it.
Get your drinks ready. I actually got Giardia on the AT.
Wait, you hiked the AT?
Yeah, back in 2011.
No.
Should we talk about it?
Yeah, okay. What happened?
So in 2011, and I didn't get the onslaught of symptoms like I think most people like traditionally do, you know, the crazy vomiting, diarrhea. But what was happening several months after the hike was I would get really distended and bloated, especially if I went more than 2 or 3 hours without eating. And I didn't know what it was. I went to a doctor and tested positive for Giardia. So obviously that's not something that you struggle with.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fun fact of the day. That's
now, a you know, strange, doesn't bloat.
That's a strange Giardia. Symptoms.
I was shocked when I tested positive for that because I had heard so much about it on the trail, and I exhibited none of the symptoms aside from the fact that my stomach would turn rock hard if I didn't eat every 3 hours.
Oh, mine turns rock hard when I eat every few hours.
Yeah.
It's because it's so inflated.
It's called getting fat, and welcome to the club.
Yeah.
okay, so you're filtering water now. What are you using out of curiosity?
Just bleach. So I got little dropper bottles of bleach. Divvied up.
So this is going to be Grace's first long distance hike
when
she does the Hey Duke.
Yeah, so that's another thing. I wouldn't say I'm like, oh, terribly worried about. I think the way I'm rationalizing it in my head and making it okay is thinking the difficulties that the Hey Duke presents over something like the Continental Divide Trail or the PCT or AT is navigation, right? Water hauls, logistics is much more difficult.
So I actually don't know very much about the Hey Duke Trail. So I don't know where it lines up in terms of difficulty compared to other trails or very much about it. So if you could fill me in, that'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's a route rather than a trail. So it's more of a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard to say, but roughly about 60% is off trail, maybe 40% is on trail. There are no markers. It's in the desert. Water is very scarce. I think most people consider it like a step up from anything on the Triple Crown, like a logical next step. I think a lot of people, you know, do the AT, do the PCT, do the CDT, and then they look for something like the Hey Duke Trail.
Okay.
Oftentimes, not always, right? But that's kind of a logical progression.
No, that's accurate.
It's an 800 or so mile route through the desert. It starts north of Arches National Park. It ends in Zion. And it basically weaves its way all throughout the desert.
Yeah.
Goes down to the Grand Canyon in Arizona before heading back north. So
that's an awesome area.
Oh, yeah.
Are you concerned at all about throwing her into like the thick of things with such a hard trail?
Yeah, I definitely am. And like I said, the difficulties it presents over just a standard through hike as if I was taking her on the PCT are those navigation, logistics, the water carrying, that type of thing every day and dealing with, you know, intense fluctuations because the desert has the hottest hots, the coldest colds,
right?
The wind, right? It's a place of extremes. I think I can take a lot of the burden off by I'll do all of the logistics, at least to start, right?
Right.
Because I'll let her have it just be a standard through hike where I can kind of lead her. I can do the logistics. I can do the navigation on point. And as she figures out her through hike physically with her body, like taking care of blisters, you know, how do I hold my pack with tons of weight on it? Those things that everybody goes through in their first few weeks of through hiking, she can focus just on that and I'll take care of the stuff that kind of puts it over the top.
Yeah. And that's good advice as well for someone that's trying to plan something with a significant other. If one of them has more experience than the other, maybe to, you know, beforehand split things up that way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I imagine a scenario where you guys get like 10 miles into this trail and you look at her and you're like, you brought the maps, right? Okay. So you're taking a lot of the burden up front. What about for the rest of the treks? How do you anticipate the significant other factor playing into it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of give and take. I think I'll obviously defer to her in the beginning. I would be much more attuned if I was by myself to going big miles and, you know, being with my buddies and being like, oh, let's mash miles. Let's, you know, go big. This time I'm not at all doing that. I'm going to defer to her. I think we have to average to finish on time on the Hey Duke, something like 15 miles a day. I think that's very attainable.
Mm-hmm. And finish in time for what? Why do you have a time constraint?
Yeah, so we've got other plans going to Scotland, right, from the Hey Duke. So we've got kind of a timeline there. We're meeting some buddies. And yeah. So.
Are you doing the Highland Way?
No, we're not. We're actually doing, it's called the Great Outdoors Challenge. The Great Outdoors is like the magazine. It's like the backpacker magazine of Europe. And they put on this challenge. You have to like apply and get accepted. And then what they do, it's really awesome idea. They give you like 12 starting points and 12 ending points. And it's 12 starting points on the West Coast, 12 ending points on the East Coast. You pick one of each and then you just make your own route between them, which is really cool. Yeah. So we're doing that with a few buddies in May, and I put that route together for us, which was a lot of planning. And you have to have a full route sheet, which is day by day, which I'm not at all accustomed to, where you have to say how many miles you're going, how much elevation gain you have, where you're sleeping each night. What's your foul weather alternate, they call it. So if weather gets nasty and you're planning to go up on a high route, what's your alternative?
So you need to submit this all to them before you start?
Yep. And then they have a vetting process with experienced hikers from this challenge who go through this whole sheet with you and help you plan and determine if it's right for your group or not.
I was going to say, is that part of your application, like in order for them to accept you, that you have to submit that, or does that come after you get accepted?
That comes after you get accepted. You kind of give them a little bit of what we had at the beginning, your hiker resume,
right?
To see if you're up for the challenge. Obviously, they probably don't want first-time hikers out there.
Right. And I was going to say, does planning it like that, do you have to reach like a certain amount of elevation gain each day, or do you have to hit a certain amount of miles each day? Why are they concerned with how much you do?
I think they want to limit, they don't want people being too ambitious and failing.
Right.
I think they want people to succeed in this event, right? And a lot of it is, I think they have like 250 people each year that they accept who can do it. And I think it's half like a challenge and half, hey, let's get everybody doing something similar and build this camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like half social hike, half wilderness adventure.
That's cool. What kind of software do you use to build the route?
They give you a bunch of software. What I use are OS Maps, Ordnance Survey, which is what the UK is built out on, similar to our Nat Geo maps in the US.
Yeah.
The OS maps are the equivalent in the UK, except you can get much more detailed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's applications on there to kind of plan the route. And I have a buddy who has done it a few times, and he really helped me out a lot with the logistics of that, because that was for me much more difficult than the HeyDuke planning.
Yeah.
HeyDuke planning felt much more like planning for the PCT. This, I've never planned like day by day, this is where I'm going to camp. That is much different than you would plan anything. Yeah.
It feels hard to plan too. Like if something happens or you get held up or, you know.
Do you have to stick to that specific agenda?
No, but they give, part of your route sheet is you have to give 3 points where you check in and you give the status to like the main people that coordinate the event to make sure you're on track. And I'm sure you can alter your route if you have difficulties along the way. Some of that is your foul weather alternate. But
how did you acquire your route finding and planning skills? Like when, and did you take any courses?
I did, yeah. So I grew up, you know, my family every summer would take like 4-week vacations, and they'd always give us kids a map and let us take turns sitting in the front with my dad and directing us, which was really fun. So that kind of gained my skills at a young age. And then I think just doing the through hikes, you naturally do it. I love maps. Like I'm obsessed with maps. Grace hates how many maps I buy all the time.
Do you take maps on the PCC?
Yes. I took physical maps as high. I didn't even have the app.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, was so fun, and did the same thing for the CDT. But yeah, I think just practicing out in the field is key, and not getting the apps to do the trails and giving yourself a chance to learn it is really helpful.
Right.
If you're willing, right? I mean, that does add another difficulty. But I did that, and then, you know, recently in Golden, I took a class at the CMC. Basic mountaineering, which had some navigational courses in it built in.
I've heard the analogy of using like gut hook is the equivalent of using a calculator all the time to do like basic addition. Like you just lose the ability to do it in your head.
Yeah, I think that probably is right. Those apps are great and can be very helpful, but I think just like a lot of people say, if that's the one thing you're relying on, you're likely making a mistake.
Sure.
And why not? If this is something you want to do your whole life and you want to continue doing through hikes or outdoor adventures or planning your own routes, like build your skills just like anybody else. And, you know, that makes you just that much more independent and less attached to something to, you know, baby you through.
Sure.
Through something like that.
I've talked to more than one person that has hiked the Triple Crown without learning any route finding skills, because now you can get by on the CDT even without being able to read a map and compass.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, even on the Heyduke, if I wanted to, you know, the way you do the Heyduke, there's no app for it, but there are GPS tracks you can download to Gaia on your phone.
Right.
And then I could just follow the tracks and see where I'm at.
Right.
But I prefer to have printed maps. It's a little bit more fun. You learn a lot, and I think I feel a bit more safe knowing where I'm at. You know, in my head, I'm thinking about where are my exit points? What's my strategy if something happens? Where's the nearest place to a road? And if you're just looking at a line and trying to stay on that line on an app, you're not thinking of those things. You're not
sure
learning those skills.
Yeah, you're seeing the world in two dimensions as opposed to three.
Exactly.
So I do want to backtrack a little bit back to the financial thing. You wrote a post, I think it was for Katabatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things that you recommended I thought was really interesting, and I think probably something more thru-hikers need to hear, but you're talking about, you know, all the sacrifices that you were making to pay for this trip. The one thing you weren't willing to sacrifice was your retirement fund.
Yeah, and I think that's – so my wife, Grace, full disclosure, we're both CPAs. We're both type A. We're both – I mean, our wedding, we got done in 4 months, and it was planned to a T. Huh. Like, and it was nailed.
Do you have a wedding planner?
No.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
As someone that's going through this process now, I'm married to someone who's event type A, I would say.
You're not married yet.
I know. I'm going through it. I'm in the throes.
Sounds tough.
Yeah.
I'm going through it, guys.
I think I'll make it. Pass me another beer. Yeah, to do it without a wedding planner, that's some serious type A coordination.
Yeah, so it's to the extreme. And I think maybe not to a fault, but at times, you know, we're like planning every little detail. It's really, really good when you're taking a full year off. But the one thing that bothers me as a CPA obviously in finances all the time is when I see my friends, and I feel like I have strong roots in the thru-hiker community, a ton of friends who thru-hike, and they just thru-hike every year, and you talk about savings and realize there's none. And to me, since a lot of them, you know, I love and care about them, I'm like, man, you got to start thinking about this. You don't want to work your whole life or have this chronic cycle of I thru-hike, then I work, I thru-hike, then I work, but nothing's ever like building in the background to something bigger so you don't have to work anymore.
Right. Or have to work for Walmart when you're 70 years old.
Yeah, when you're in a lot of these jobs that people do are physical jobs or jobs that require you to be in good physical shape, and that's going to eventually end.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's just so important for our generation to think about savings, and I think that's a gap where we had, right, our parents, and I'm 30, but you have your parents from our generation who are like, save everything you can. Your life is work. Your life is saving money for retirement. And then I think our generation saw that and took the full swing and like, no, live in the now and don't think about the future. Like, YOLO, right?
Right.
YOLO.
Yeah.
it's just reckless to me, I think, that you got to find a balance that'll work, yeah. Right? Of living in the now, but also planning for the future.
Twinkle is the ultimate paradox, the thrill-seeking retirement fund endorsing thru-hiker.
Wake up, everybody, wake up.
I think it's a great point, and thank you for articulating that well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shift a little bit into the gear for this hike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, you're a big gear guy. I know that you get into the specs and everything. What are your big three for this upcoming trip?
So gear shifted a lot from what I did on my through hikes of the Triple Crown, where I think I was like always thinking lighter, better, lighter, better, lighter, better, which is great for the style that I wanted to hike. With Grace, like I said, I want to change up a bit. I don't want to push her into here's the lightest setup. You have a 7-pound base weight and have fun being uncomfortable.
Right.
So I naturally beefed up, my big three. So I went from a Gossamer Gear Kumo to a Gossamer Gear Gorilla, which is the same that Grace will use. We're using a Gossamer Gear 2. If it was my preference, like I said, I'd like an A-frame shelter. Grace wanted something fully enclosed, which I'm fine with. So that's great. So we'll use that.
What's the bug situation like in the desert this time of year?
Oh, have you ever seen Coyote Peterson?
Uh-uh.
Breaking Trail?
Uh-uh.
Okay, so we watched this. Our buddies are real into it. Actually, Disco was the one that showed it to us the first time. And there's this thing in the desert called the giant desert centipede, and it looks like a bug from hell. Like straight out of hell. It's crazy.
Does it have a poisonous bite?
It like the worst poisonous bite of any insect there is. Ooh. I'd say it's like 8 inches long. And rather than like the centipede you see in the jungle that's like a circle and really cute little legs and stuff, you know?
I don't think centipedes are ever cute. Okay, continue.
Well, this one is definitely not cute. This one is like, it looks like bones stuck together and its legs are like claws
that
pinch.
What is it called?
Giant desert centipede. Look this up. Yeah. I think it's Breaking Trail.
Okay.
And this guy purposely lets one bite him.
Yo, 100%.
Show newts.
I say Bajor, you say show nudes.
Oh, don't do it if you want to sleep tonight. Do not watch that thing.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, and it's like this long, and it is fast and squirmy, and it just thrashes all around. It is a nightmare.
Just Google image this. Yeah, and this looks like something out of like a Tim Burton movie. Get that off your screen now, please.
I can't look away.
Just wait till you see the video. You'll be scarred.
They're different colors.
Ah! Whoa.
Oh my God, that one's even worse.
They're from different regions in hell.
I don't like that one at all.
That one's from Central Hell.
I don't blame Grace for not wanting an apron.
Yeah. So, good on you to not do the tarp setup in the desert with those things crawling around.
Exactly. So back to the gear setup and away from that centipede from hell.
Yeah.
The last part of the big three, we're taking katabatic quilts. One we have is a Swatch. It's a 15 degree. It's a sewn foot box. But the one that I got that I actually like a lot better is the Flex. It's like an ounce or two penalty, but you can unzip the foot box and it becomes just a flat blanket. I think that'll be key for us because then we took less down coats or warmer pants because we can kind of huddle in that together if we wanted. Like if we're sitting watching the sunset or sitting watching the stars, you know, you can kind of use that around you.
Yeah. So penalty up front, but you get to save on the back end.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it just serves more functions than something that's a sewn foot box.
Yeah. We talked about katabatic in a previous episode, but that they do great stuff.
Yeah. And a local right here in Colorado, Lakewood, Colorado.
Exactly.
Everyone knows this but me.
You've got the quilt that unzips completely.
Yeah. Which is called the Flex Series and comes in different, temperature ratings. And it's much cheaper than their sewn foot box. So I'm a fan.
Okay.
I'm a big fan.
Let's round up to include sleeping pad and footwear.
Yeah. So sleeping pad, we both have the NeoAir. The thermal one, it's like silver. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, the X-Therm.
X-Therm.
There it is.
Yep. So it's just a little higher R value. The desert's cold. And it's an early Hey Duke. I think most people start mid to late March, and we're starting, around March 10th.
What temperatures are you expecting?
Down into the low 20s to teens at night at the coldest, I would expect. And then obviously it'll just heat up as we continue. But you do get on the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is 9,000 feet, I believe, 9,000 feet. But it's cold every time people go there on the Hey Duke.
Sure.
It's cold. It's snow. So
I was cold in the Southern California desert at 2,000 feet in September, October. Like, yeah, I can't imagine what it's like at 10,000 feet.
Yeah.
And earlier.
And the desert's just place of extremes, you know? It's the full gamut. So my base weight has gone up a lot.
Sure.
What did it start at and what is it now?
I think my base weight I got whittled down to about 7.5 pounds on the CDT. Now I haven't quite calculated at all. It depends on some of my, fun gear choices. Like, am I going to bring the nice gimbal for the camera?
Uh-huh.
But it'll probably be around 12 pounds.
Got you.
Is my guess.
That's not bad.
Actually, no, it's not bad, but
I actually did want to talk about the camera stuff because, tell everyone your Instagram handle because people need to be following you.
Ah, all right. It's my last name, Shattuck, and 311, like the band, because they're awesome.
Is that your favorite band?
Oh, yeah. And you know who else loves them? Andy Bentz, Hikerman.
No shit.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Huge fan.
There's a big through hiking 311 following. I'm learning this. That's interesting. What's your favorite 311 song?
Amber.
Rainstorm.
that's from the only album that I have. It was All Mixed Up. Is that the same album?
No, that's much older. But they're like every other band, right? Like their old stuff from the early 90s to mid 90s is like killer.
Sure.
And then it just kind of fades to less good, less good, less good.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
Are they still making new music?
They are. Anyway. I saw him this summer.
I want more 311. Okay, Shattuck 311.
What camera do you use? Because these photos are incredible.
You know, it's a mix between lately, I just upgraded for this trip because I really like photography, but I'm very amateur hour in terms of like knowing camera settings and being in manual mode and like really thinking this all through. I'm more just like set up a nice picture, and if I snap it with my phone, I snap it with my phone. Yeah. But
I think you're walking proof that those settings are bullshit, because your photos, or maybe you're really good in the post production, but every like 80% of your pictures are postcards in the making. They're awesome.
Well, thanks.
If if you've got one takeaway from this podcast, you need to follow him on Instagram. His photos are ridiculous.
Are so good.
Yeah. It also helps to put yourself in ridiculously beautiful.
I mean, that's where I was going next is, you know, my wife and I, Grace is so good at finding just beautiful spots for us to go enjoy. And I've been lucky to adventure a lot. You know, we both really have. We've been uber privileged to be able to get out as much as we have and live where we do. And that's a huge part of it. But one thing I will say, as a plug for my phone, is the Google Pixel, I think, takes the best photos of any phone.
I was going to buy that before I started the PCT, and I ended up just sticking with my iPhone, but I've seen some of the photos that that phone takes, and it's insane.
It's a very strong camera on the phone. So sometimes, you know, I have the Sony RX100, and sometimes I'm like,
which mark?
Two.
Mark two.
Yeah, I've had it for several years now. And oftentimes now I just bring the camera instead, unless I know I'm going for something that the camera can't do, like a long exposure or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for this trip, I did upgrade to a Sony A6300, and I put a nice pancake wide angle lens on it to make it a little bit smaller, more compact, no movement in the lens, which is nice. Well, positive and negative.
Yeah.
So I upgraded to that too, and hoping to do some videos. Got a Zhiyun crane for it, which is like a gimbal, and that is not ultralight.
No.
But I think it'll be really fun with a nice mic and stuff. And, you know, when I'm out on my own, I'm not going to do anything like that. But when I'm with my wife and can take some really nice videos with her and stuff, I think that stuff we'll look back on 20 years from now and be like, man, I'm so glad I was taking videos of this. We can look back at.
Yeah, this is the world's greatest scrapbook. You're like, this will make your wedding photos look incredibly boring. No offense.
That's one of my regrets is I did a lot of road tripping before I started hiking a lot. And I took videos for the first road trip I did and edited those together. And the other road trips, I didn't take many videos. Mm-hmm. And I have that video to look back on, but none from any of the other ones. And I always wish that I had taken more videos to edit together for that. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something you guys should do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're definitely right. It's a penalty, but like I said, we're not out there. It's a big mental shift for me. I'm not out there to like crush miles and do this thing quick. I'm out there to enjoy it with my wife.
Right.
Like that's what I'm going to get enjoyment out of. I got enjoyment out of going fast last time and being with buddies and like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm learning a lot and pushing my limits. This time it's, I want to enjoy this with my wife and have fun and, you know, really soak it all in that way, which I think warrants taking some of these things that people would consider luxuries.
And since you helped her put together the gear that she was going to bring, do you have, like, what would be your gear advice that you would have to people that are kind of new at long distance hiking?
Yeah, I think if you're doing the big three or you're doing any of the small three, like the JMT, Colorado Trail, Long Trail, the best advice I can give is get your base weight below 12 pounds. 12 pounds, I think you get heavier than that and it becomes uncomfortable enough that it negatively impacts the time you're having, no matter how slow you want to go. That's the biggest advice I can give to people is try to get that base weight down.
What are the easiest parts that you found to trim down weight, especially for someone who's on a budget?
Definitely the big three. You know, cutting costs where you can, like I said, with the Katabatic, you buy the Flex, it's a lot cheaper, might take an ounce or two penalty, but you could do that on a budget rather than saving a few ounces. So look at the items that are really going to cut the ounces heavily rather than nitpicking the 1 or 2 ounces for items. I think, you know, the key is too, is when you're new at backpacking, everybody thinks backpack first. Like, what backpack am I going to get?
Right.
And really that should be the last decision you make. You should pick out a shelter first. You should pick out a sleeping system that complements the shelter or vice versa, right? You pick out your sleeping system and then you pick out a shelter that complements it. And then as you make your gear choices of food, and am I going to bring a stove or not, then you can fully decide, okay, here's all my gear. What pack does it fit in correctly?
Yeah, that's good advice. I know we've been bouncing all over the place, but I want to hear more about the international adventures after Scotland.
Yeah, so we do that hike across Scotland. I think it's going to be about 200 miles is the route I planned in 2 weeks. So it's just going to be great. I'm so excited to see that. Then we're doing a van tour in Iceland where we're renting a camper van with the same buddies we're doing Scotland with and going across there. Just kind of more sightseeing, day hiking, maybe one overnight. But mostly just van touring, just to see the sights. My wife's been there several times. I've never really traveled internationally, just once. And it's her favorite spot in the world, she says. So we're going there to see that, and I'm pretty excited. We're also going to Norway. We're going to what's called the Lofoten Islands, and I'm sure I'm going to get beat up on that pronunciation. But it looks like Lofoten, so excuse me if it's anything different.
No one listening.
I don't know how strong our Norwegian listenership is.
Well, I know we're big in Mexico, according to Jabo.
Oh, yeah, huge in Mexico.
And that's their favorite winter destination, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Northern Norway. But we're going to be there in the summer. We're planning on setting up kind of base camps and peak bagging. So like I said, my interests and Grace's too are, you know, we both want a through hike, but we also want to do some peak bagging and base camping, sightseeing, taking pictures, stuff like that. And that place just looks phenomenal. I have a few friends that have been that said it's amazing. It's kind of halfway between the Arctic Circle and the North Pole. So it's well into the Arctic Circle. And when we're there for the 3 weeks, the sun won't set. So 24 hours to high noon, which
that's
I think sounds
so
crazy.
Trippy.
Yeah, you gotta drink a lot. What's the go-to spirit in Norway? I don't even know.
Something hard.
Gonna say, yeah, you gotta find it and you gotta drink a lot of it.
This is why we need Norwegian listeners.
Yeah.
Tell us what you drink.
Write in your Norwegian form of getting blasted. Okay, so after Norway?
After Norway, we're meeting my sister, who's also living here in Denver now, and we're doing the Pyrenees High Route. I have a few friends who've done it. It looks amazing. It's another thing similar to the Hayduk, where the Pyrenees is this mountain chain that separates Spain and France, and it runs the whole border of the countries. You hike from the Atlantic to the Mediterranean. There are a bunch of trails like the GR10 and GR11. I may have those wrong, but I think that's them. Like one's on the Spanish side, the other's on the French side. The high route is mostly off trail like the Hayduk and just high points it. So similar to the Appalachian Trail where it's like hitting every peak and just staying on the high ridge the whole time. That looks awesome. It gets, I think, up to 12,000 feet or 11,000 feet, something high. It looks very Sierra-esque in the pictures I've seen.
I've done about a day on the GR10, I believe it was, in Spain. And it was some of the most beautiful country I'd ever seen before. And unfortunately, one of the guys in our group was not a backpacker and got just crazy stressed, overworked, and got like started throwing up.
Oh,
no. And they got diarrhea. I don't know, maybe overworked is the wrong explanation for what was happening, but we had to turn back. It was really upsetting.
You overwhelmed the person to the point that they got diarrhea.
Maybe just my company gave them diarrhea.
Sometimes
tend to do that.
I feel queasy when
I was
going to
say, I
much.
Feel like you're due for a bathroom break at this point.
Yeah. It's probably the smell, right? Through hikers, first day of a through hike, smell like a through hiker again.
And like, I don't smell good to begin with, so it compounds.
Funny thing about that smell is that I had sent my bear bin to Lone Pine when I was initially going to go back and do this here at the end of the season.
Could we make a drinking game out of this?
Oh, yeah. Every time I mention the fact that I didn't finish my through hike. yep. Everyone take a sip. But when it finally came back, like I had put my tent in it as well. And when it finally came back to Denver, I opened the bear bin and it just had that smell like immediately come out. And I had a friend come visit the other week and they asked, you know, like, how bad did you guys smell? And I was like, come over here. And I like twisted the lid off and I was like, just put your nose in this.
You could sell that as a perfume.
It's literally just a bottled scent in the corner of my
head. Yeah, sure. You know what? There probably are a few hiker trash folk out there that would be really into that.
Yeah. Ugh. Or if you're like trying to pretend you're hiking, you know, just get some of that aroma on you.
Waft it onto yourself.
There you go.
The endorphins start kicking in.
Anyone.
You're not even moving.
Yep.
All right. So Pyrenees.
Yep. And then after that, we, you know, it's so hard to plan all of this stuff, even for us. And we don't want to have it over-planned. Right? Yeah. We got our first few months kind of planned. Like, yeah, there's spontaneity in the Hey Duke Trail. Like, we have all these alternate routes we want to do. We don't have, like, we have to get this point, this day, this point. You know, it's kind of, that'll be free-flowing. But in and of itself, like, we do have a due date we have to finish by. But we really wanted the trip to just kind of free-flow after that. We have a bunch of ideas of different hikes we want to do, like the Walker's Hot route. The Alpine Pass route. There's this route in Slovenia my friend did that looks really enticing. All sorts of things in the Dolomites, which is northern Italy. Grace really wants
those.
To do.
Those are really pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of pick and choose from there, and depending on what the seasons are doing. And then eventually, you know, late September, early October, we'll roll around and we'll likely head to Nepal.
Nice.
And spend a few months there. And that is completely unplanned. You know, I've had people ask me, like, oh, what region in Nepal are you going to? I have no idea.
Right.
You know, we'll kind of plan that as we go.
So I have a question. On our last podcast, we put out a thing saying that people that were going to thru-hike in 2018 mm-hmm. could apply to send us audio clips throughout their trips to tell mm-hmm. us how they're doing and where they're at and what they're up to. Are you going to send us clips filling us in on how your trip is going?
I won't, but I'll send clips of Grace.
There we go.
Oh, so Grace will send clips.
You'll get a southern accent. You'll get a lot of y'alls, and it'll be cute.
It'll be much better.
I thought the answer was just going to be, I won't.
I won't.
That's my cue to leave.
I'll send clips of Grace in.
Yeah, give us updates. We want to know.
Yeah.
We're all hooked at this point. I'm speaking for everybody.
Yeah, no, everyone's hooked.
Yeah.
All of our Norwegian listeners cannot wait to see you.
Oh, definitely. that's going to be tough, the 24 hours of daylight in Norway. And, you know, we're base camping and peak bagging. I'm just, my brain's going to be go, go, go. Like, what am I doing sleeping? It's light outside. I could be on top of that mountain right now.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, I could imagine.
You'll have to save your eye mask that they give you on the plane.
Yeah, we will.
So I've heard from some international buddies that getting good ultralight gear internationally is kind of a pain in the ass. Like, you have to buy it from the United States and pay the ridiculous international shipping charges. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be using the same gear from start to finish?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, we have, you know, a few temperature ratings of bags, and I'm figuring that out because I don't want to have – it's not like the PCT where I could be – hold a bag with a buddy and be like, oh, send it out at this time, and I'm going to kind of switch bags and retool my gear on the fly. You can't do that in Europe. So I think we are just going to go into it with either 15 or 30-degree bags and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the really only – hard part is the sleeping bag, right? We may be really hot sometimes, and maybe sometimes it might not be enough, but
can you mail things general delivery in Europe like you can here?
I don't think
so. Like how we can mail general delivery to the post office?
That's a good question. Let's
poll the Norwegian listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Norwegians, write us in. Well, all right. So you said that you did try to schedule some spontaneity into this. Is there anything planned beyond this, what was it? Where did we leave off? You were
Dolomites.
The Dolomites.
Nepal after that. You know, we do have to be home for the holidays. I got one of my best friends is getting married in Pennsylvania.
He'll understand.
Yeah. So I'm in the wedding, which is awesome. And he gave me a long enough heads up that I'm like, I can actually make this work because we can be home for the holidays right after Nepal and transition to South America. Maybe spend 2 weeks seeing family and planning South America because we haven't done any planning for that. So,
well, we got to get you back on the show when you're out here. We're going to claim one of your 14 nights.
There you go.
We'll use our Patreon account to get us out to Pennsylvania.
Ooh. or maybe northern Italy.
Oh, fine. I accept.
Well, Twinkle, I'm very stoked to follow this trek, especially your beautiful photos. I do have to ask. I'm sure I've asked this before, but I forgot. How did you get the trail name Twinkle?
Yeah, that was the long trail. I wore boots, which was wrong. If you wear boots, you're doing it. No. But, yeah, I was getting blisters like crazy. And I was by myself. And, man, I was just struggling really bad with it. Like, everybody is on their first through hike. There's nothing new. No new story there. But this girl I met at one of the shelters asked me. She's like, oh, I can help you out. I'm a trainer at a high school or something. So I deal with this all the time. And I put my foot on her lap, and her boyfriend or husband or whatever was at the side. And she's like, I can't quite see, like, wiggle your toes around. And her husband was like, Twinkle Toes. So I dropped the toes, and, you know, that's that. But people call me everything. Twinkle, Twinkie, McTwinkleberry.
McTwinkleberry.
Twink. Whatever it is.
I'm so glad I don't have a trail name.
there are a lot of redundant trail names out there. I think Badger's probably one of them. Definitely one of them.
That's the buddy I did the John Muir Trail with first was Badger.
Of course. I don't, also from think I've met any other... Oh, I'm glad to know that I'm not the only person who did it that way. I don't think I've met any other Twinkles. So kudos to you for having a true original.
Yeah,
at least
I don't know either.
In my sphere, yeah.
It's one of those funny things, too. It's maybe not the most masculine name, and it's funny in my life here in Denver and the coworkers and stuff. And like, they call you Twinkle. And you're like, what is your second life? That sounds interesting.
Yeah, there's another buddy out here. He shows up to all the thru-hiker meetups that we host in Denver. He goes by the trail name of Princess Peach.
Princess Peach, that's awesome.
I respect that. I respect that. Well, hey, man, thanks so much for giving us a nice preview of your upcoming journey. I'm stoked. I can't wait to track it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been great.
Yeah. Is there any, other than your Instagram account, are there any other avenues that people should be following you?
Probably not. No, I have a blog, but I don't know how much Grace and I will do about it. I know, building the excitement, right?
I mean, Instagram is plenty good. It seems to be...
It's like the lazy way, maybe not lazy way, but it's the way that you're not taking too much away from your adventure to share it with people. You're not limiting your experience to overshare.
Right.
I feel like it's like the happy medium.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Well, I'm stoked.
Same.
It sounds epic. Equal parts stoked and jealous.
Oh yeah, I've been planning in my head this whole time. Oh, I could do that too.
Yeah. Well, at least we've got Twinkle as a buddy. He can advise us on what trek to take in the future.
I think anyone can do it, right? I wrote an article recently. I think the Katabatic one you said for how to prepare for this, and the big thing was you don't have to have a job and make a ton of money to do something like this, and it doesn't have to be a year off to adventure. It could be whatever you want it to be, but if you want, you know, a month off or so, or 3 months to do the PCT, like anybody can do it on any budget. You just, you know, need to be smart and plan and prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrifice,
yeah. Totally. But I feel like thru-hikers are so good at that. Sacrifice, and most of them are pretty good planners and preparers.
Yeah.
That I've met. It's pretty inspiring.
There's a lot of people who I think want to take on an adventure like this, and, you know, they're so overburdened by bills, but, you know, they spending a lot of time out at the bar. They've got Netflix, Hulu, HBO, they've got the full gamut of the online premium services. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who thru-hike that don't make a ton of money, but they are good at sacrificing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good takeaway lesson.
There's one thing I have as well that, I mean, I got one of the guys to sign up for it, but it's just an app on my phone. It's called Capital, but it's Capital with a Q. Have I mentioned this on the podcast? Deja vu. It's Capital with a Q, so Q-A-P-I-T-O-L. And basically it's just one of those money-saving apps where I have it linked to my credit card. So every time I make a purchase on my credit card, it rounds up the change to the nearest dollar, and it takes that change and it puts it into – as many accounts as I'll set. So I've got three different ones set up for different things right now. So if the change was 33 cents, it would just do that three times because I have it set three times. But it's just been accumulating in each of these accounts, and I don't even notice it going away. And then when I come time to want to travel, I've got this nice little chunk saved up. So that's another really nice way to be able to put some stuff aside, especially if you don't want to have to think about putting stuff aside.
Mm-hmm. We got to get these people as a sponsor.
I know. Yeah, they have no correlation to us, but...
But they should. They should. This is the perfect thru-hiker app.
There you go. We also need PBR to sponsor us.
PBR. We do drink. We do. I don't think PBR sponsors anything other than mustaches, which I should also mention Twinkle's got a very nice mustache.
I've got to step up my game.
Your mustache game is sorely lacking.
It's weak.
I know. Well, Twinkle, thanks so much for giving us a preview of your upcoming journey. But you don't get to go anywhere yet because there's more show left.
Good.
More
I'm
PBRs
excited.
To be drank. So I do want to talk about a couple of articles that came out on the trek recently. The first one is titled "How the Trail Helped with My Anxiety." And it's a really good article. I think it's written by someone, Tess Mullaney. I should have this known by now.
It's Tess Mullaney.
She, I think, threw like the AT last year, but she wrote a very good article about, you know, how she was struggling before she left for her thru hike and how the trail kind of helped to rewire her. And although I'm probably not clinically someone that would be diagnosed with anxiety, I definitely had anxious tendencies before I left for my first thru hike. I am kind of type A, I think manifests maybe differently the way that you were describing. But I didn't even realize how anxious of a person I was until I thru hiked, and more specifically until I came back from a thru hike and I saw the world through a very different lens. And I just noticed how much more calm I was, and how in time that calmness dissipated as I entered back into my rat race routine. And I shouldn't say rat race, because I'm very lucky that I get to work for myself. I just choose to put myself into unhealthy routines. But to the larger point, thru hiking is a wonderful means for scraping the rust and the garbage out of that part of your brain. I remember distinctly coming back from the AT and then more recently the PCT. Take a drink.
Cheers.
Wait. You hiked the AT?
2011, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
People at home are wasted right now, which is unfortunate because I think most people listen to this on their morning commute. but... Yeah, it's just seeing your old world through that new lens. Not only do you see the world through fresh eyes, but also very clear, cogent, just very present. And it made me realize how agitated I was all the time before leaving. So it's a very good read. I'm also curious to hear if you guys – I'm not sure if you know, anxious emotions are not omnipresent, but all too common, or if it's not just actual anxiety. I'm curious to hear how the trail altered that part of your guys' brains.
Once I got off trail, I kind of noticed the way I would react to things was a lot different than before I hiked. Whereas, you know, if I couldn't attend an event I wanted to go to with friends, or if I had to go do something by myself instead of with another person, or, you know, if a guy doesn't like me, or, you know, just any of the little things at life that you, like, would start to get anxious about. For some reason now, I just, like, don't really give a shit is the best way to explain it. And it's, like, there's just always this constant thing in the back of my head that's, like, how much does this actually matter? Mm. You know, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, does this really affect you that much? No. Okay. We don't care then. And I think that became a lot more of a thing, like my ability to just like not let things get to me after I hiked. And I think there's something about being on your own every day, in your head every day, thinking to yourself every day, that you just, you know, you start to realize like what things actually matter and what things don't, and what things are worth. You know, you have so many things to stress about on trail that you start to realize what things are actually worth the effort of stressing over them and getting anxious about them, and what things just, whether or not you get anxious or stressed about them, just aren't going to matter.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's the difference between real and manufactured stress, right?
Right.
Like we're exposed to so much manufactured stress in our day to day. But you know, after 5 months of walking through lightning storms,
yeah,
or running out of food, or, you know, getting Giardia 70 miles from town, whatever it might be, it puts in perspective getting an awkward look from your boss or
right,
a negative interaction with,
and it's,
you know,
a funny way to think of it too. Is like, oh, well, now that you've had so many worse experiences, these ones that used to seem bad are kind of just like, eh. But yeah, no, it's, I think it's really great.
I think part of it too, another aspect that I found is the minimalist aspect. And I don't mean minimalist within the backpacking community. I mean, people who don't backpack and see anybody who's carrying everything they're going to need on their back is a minimalist, right? Anyone who backpacks is really a minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you do this thru hike, you realize how little you actually need, like how simple life can be.
Yeah.
And part of that really helps de-stress or take the weight off of that anxiety that you might have. And you can really take that back to real life in terms of, it's easy to clutter your life. Like, it's easy to let things get really busy and you want this and you have these desires and you want this new toy or this new thing, this new car. And really, myself, I have to keep myself in check all the time of, do I actually need this or is this just clutter? Like, really simplify and have that minimalist approach, bring that back to life, can help, you know, with the anxiety that I think a lot of people have in the daily stresses of life.
Yeah,
that's a great point. That's a great point. And I think that's probably one of the biggest changes I noticed amongst thru-hikers is how simple they keep their lives after a thru-hike, mm-hmm. is that they are almost averse to stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think the more time you spend removed from a thru-hike, it slowly starts creeping back
in. It does. It sure does.
So it's beneficial to keep adventuring for, I think, that reason alone, is it gives you that lesson that you don't need very much to be happy.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Definitely gives you a lot of independence as well. Like, mm-hmm. for example, this weekend we went to a beer festival in Boulder, and my shoes, they were like broken. I couldn't wear them after we got off the bus. And so we were going to go straight to this beer festival, and I was with like six of my friends, and I was like, I've got to go to Target. I've got to buy a new pair of shoes because I cannot wear these. And, you know, they're like, do you need us to go with you? Do you want someone to go with you? How are you going to find the place after? And I was like, I'm fine. I'll plug it in. I'll go there. I'll get it. And then I'll figure out where you guys are, and I'll come meet you. And it's like that type of independence that normally before the trail, I don't think I would be like so open to just being like, I'm in a different city. I'm going to go off on my own to do the stuff I have to do. No one trouble yourself with coming. I'll meet you there after. And it definitely sorts you out with an independence that you don't usually find unless you have to spend quality time with yourself.
Totally. Trail gives you confidence. You can withstand a lot.
I think the other thing the trail does, at least initially, right? I think after you do a few thru hikes and your community starts to be a lot of thru hiker people, at least the first time you do it or the second time, you just meet people that are so much different from you. And I think that's one of the beautiful things of thru hiking is getting on the trail. And in my personal experience, right, I went to college, I got a good job, I was climbing that corporate ladder, and everyone around me, that's what they were doing, right? Because that was my peer group, that's who I was with, and that's just what I thought was the norm. And if you're not doing that, like, you're not doing it right, you know? And then getting on the trail and meeting so many people that were so different and had much more romantic views on life, you know, getting that different perspective, whatever it is that you're not used to, and getting out of that comfort zone or that friend group you have that are likely all very similar, is very eye-opening and can help. For me, it helped really with those anxious thoughts and whatnot of, you know, chill out, things are going to be just fine, you know? And I think that's a great thing of thru hiking is getting those perspectives from the people you meet on the trail, which if you do a trail like the PCT or AT, you're bound to meet a lot of people unless that's not your intention and you're actively avoiding it.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And I think that's one of the things people struggle with before their thru hike, even after they make the decision to go, is that they're delivering these plans to people that are still stuck in that world, that are trying to climb the corporate ladder. I think this is not the case for everyone, but for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then they say that they're going to go spend a half year in the backcountry, and they just get a lot of crazy looks like, the fuck's wrong with you? Like, why would you want to give up this cushy life to go, you know, suffer in the backwoods?
Mm-hmm. Like, why would you take that risk?
Yeah.
And I think inversely, you could have people that are maybe romantics and barely scraping by financially, and they go out there and maybe meet somebody who's, you know, not taking the same route, and you find some common ground or something to learn from somebody. I think everyone on the trail has something to offer and people can learn from. And just meeting people with different backgrounds is eye-opening and, you know, for me, it helped remove some of that anxiety of this is what I should be doing. It was eye-opening. Like, I don't need to do that. Right. You know, I'm going to be fine. I don't have to do that. It's just what I'm seeing in my local little group back at home. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the most, anxiety aside, that's one of the most redeeming aspects of thru hiking is just the community of people that you meet out there.
Yeah. I think that's the best part. That's been the best part is the friendships I've made in my thru hikes.
And yeah.
So many of them, you know, I still have several years later.
Yeah.
I was actually, you know, I posted this on Facebook, like, oh yeah, I just quit my job and my wife and I are taking off, and throwback, one of my buddies that I met on the John Muir Trail, very first thru hike I ever did. And we met at, what is it, Kennedy Meadows, and then went south the whole way together. And my group of two, me and my best friend from back home, kind of met up with him and another girl, and four of us did the last 110 miles together. And that was like the most, you know, shaping experience I had of look how close you can become to somebody in a matter of 6 days.
Right.
And that was like, I need more of this. That human connection is so much more real than what I was obtaining in college
or
real life. And it was fun to have him comment and say, remember when we did this, you know, 9 years ago, I never would have imagined it'd lead to all of this and how much it'd shape your future. And I was like, wow, I took a step back. Like, that's so true. That's crazy how shaping that is to put yourself out there.
Yeah, it's definitely different forming like connections with people when it's not based on technology, you know, when it's not texting to make plans or, you know, interacting on the internet and, you know, you're spending your days talking to them face to face in person and then seeing them the next day face to face. And it's definitely it's an interesting comparison of how you meet people and form these friendships and how long they last and how close they are as opposed to other ones.
Yeah. Totally. And definitely.
You cut through the small talk bullshit very quickly because right. there's only so much of that to go around. And especially if you're hiking with someone for a decent amount of time, you're bound to experience a stressful moment with them, which, you know, people show their true colors, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think going through that is a real bonding experience.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is, for sure.
So we somehow segued from the trail being a cure for anxiety to just an awesome community of people. And maybe those are, maybe that's the same thing, but, yeah. If you're someone who's, you know, you consider yourself to be anxious, and you're considering a thru hike, I strongly recommend you check out the article. Again, it's, How the Trail Helped with My Anxiety. And as always, we will link it in the show notes. The other article I want to get into, the Trek's managing editor, Maggie Slepian. I think this is the first shout out I've given her, which is a shame.
Yeah, I haven't heard you say it.
That's too bad because she's the unsung hero of the website. She does so much. She's amazing. Put together a post for the best backpacking headlamps of 2018. You can get the full list there, but I think it'd be fun for the three of us to talk through ours. I'll start. I think what probably is the most common one, and maybe you two also have this in your pack, is the Black Diamond Spot. I think it's popular largely just because it's so affordable. I think it's like $20 or $30 on Amazon.
Is that the lowest lumen they offer?
I think it's highest output, and again, I'm just speaking from memory. I think it's 300 lumens.
Oh, okay.
So it's not too bad, but I will say the biggest knock on it is after maybe 4 or 5 nights of heavy usage, we were doing a lot of night hiking toward the end. It you're not getting 300 lumens. It dims pretty quickly. And I was changing out the batteries almost every single town toward the end. So the battery life's not great. Everything else I loved. It's pretty lightweight. I want to say it's
3.2 ounces.
3.2 ounces. Thanks, Chance.
That is light.
Yeah.
Is that with batteries?
Guess what I hiked with. No. Batteries are 1.1 ounces.
So it's 4.4 total.
Yeah.
4.3.
It's got, you know, it's got the AT features, which is the red light, you know, when you're in a shelter.
Oh, wait, you know what? No, it is with the batteries because the 3 AAA spare ones I have written down, those are marked extra batteries.
Gotcha.
I'm looking at my lighter pack right now.
Perfect. For the money, I don't think you can beat it. Like, if you're on a budget and you're looking for a place to save a couple bucks, the spot's a good way to go.
Yeah.
So that's included in the list.
So that's what I use as well. And I've actually got a little tip, which might be common sense to most people, but for me was a huge thing that I learned, which was that you can lock the light on it. So it does die pretty quickly if you're not careful with it. And I mean, not too quickly, but quickly enough. But I had a problem where I would put it in my pack and then I'd be taking things out and putting things back in during the day and I'd accidentally bump the button and turn it on. Mm. And then I'd go to use it at night and it would be dead, which was bad for someone like me that did a lot of night hiking. And someone actually told me that if you hold down the light on the top of it and don't let go, it'll flash like this little blue light, which means that it's locked. And then you can't turn it back on just by pressing the button. You have to hold it down again until it flashes off.
That's a really nice feature.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's common sense and everyone knows that. And that was game changing for me.
I'm laughing because I hiked the PCT with a guy who had 40,000 Instagram followers. And I'm a stupid human being and I make a lot of mistakes. As we're getting off the plane in Seattle, he's doing an Instagram story video of me with my headlamp in the back, just the light shining at the back.
I do remember that.
Yeah. So he was there to document every mistake that I made, but it was at that moment that I was aware of the feature, but I didn't realize its practicality because I don't remember ever doing that. Get your drinks ready on the AT.
Wait, you hiked the AT?
In 2011.
Oh my God. Should we talk about that?
I think we should talk about it. But yeah, so I did it like as quickly as possible on the PCT last year. So yeah, no, that is a game changing feature, because there's nothing worse than if you're lining up for a night of night hiking and you go to use your headlamp and it's either completely dim or not working.
It's
whatsoever.
Funny too, because like it wasn't even like a person I was hiking with that knew it. Like I was literally just bitching on my YouTube channel about like my headlamp keeps dying and I keep night hiking and my headlamp keeps dying, and some guy just commented, he's like, you do know you can lock that, right? And like literally wrote out the steps, and I was like, thank you.
Yeah, no,
you saved my hike.
Yeah,
because it's not intuitive, because there's just one button
right
on the headlamp.
It's so simple that it's hard,
right?
So I'm gonna one up that feature,
take it.
And in my research for this upcoming hike, I found the Black Diamond Ion, which has a rechargeable battery.
Yeah.
So I think almost everybody nowadays either brings a external battery pack or right some sort of like solar charger type of deal, right?
Are you bringing an Anker?
I am. Yes.
What size?
Huge. 26,500 milliamp hours. Yeah, like huge.
It's a pound and a half or something?
It's closer to, I think it's like just about a pound.
Okay.
I had the 20,000 one, and that one was 12.4 ounces.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing is, too, it's for Grace and I. She can charge her phone and her electronics off of it as well. So, you know, it's split that in
half. I don't know
if
you've thought about this, but it could be smarter to each bring one. Maybe not like the same size, but like a smaller one. Because there were times on trail where one of the guys specifically, his stopped working properly. And then he was screwed, but then I had extra in mine, so I was letting him charge for mine until he could get his fixed or
That's
changed out or whatever.
Point, yeah.
But when you're just going off of one, if something happens to that one, that's it. So I don't know if it's smarter or not, maybe not smarter.
Maybe bring
Bring like two half sizes instead of one big size.
Yeah, or even just like an emergency, very low. Like to charge the phone one more time, so if we get in a pinch, I can still have the GPS if we need it.
Yeah, because
right?
I know there were plenty of times where, I mean, I was lucky that we were in the group of five of us, because there were plenty of times where we all bailed each other out when our chargers would have issues.
I mean, so that goes back to your earlier point of this is a great reason of why you're better off route finding using a compass and map.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not reliant
Bam,
on
right
your
there
anchor to be able to navigate. So yeah, definitely. But I think one of the advantages to the 2600, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you can do the dual USB charging, so you can charge it twice as fast, correctly?
Twice as fast. So what that means, and you know, this was all learning for me, what that means is you have two USB-C cables, both of them hook into the charger at once, and it's charging double.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So it charges like twice as fast. So if you're in town and just doing like, hey, I'm in town getting lunch and spending 4 hours here before hitting the trail again rather than staying overnight, you could likely charge your anchor all the way up in that.
Do
that
they
time
do it for any smaller than that, or do you have to get the 2600?
No, they do it smaller than that. It's like the newest, I don't remember if it's like Qualcomm or some technical word. It's real techy, but you'll see in the features on Amazon where
so
I
basically
got it.
You just have to get a newer one. Because I have the Anchor, the 20,000, and mine doesn't do that, but I wish it did.
The other thing you need to be careful about if you're searching for external batteries is nowadays phones are taking higher charges, higher like output that it can give, max output to be able to charge. For instance, my Pixel 2, if I use one of those little wall chargers from an iPhone, it won't charge it because it doesn't put up out the output. Translate that into an external battery, it has to give out like 5 volts to be able to charge a Pixel. I think that's much more than it actually needs.
Right.
But something like if you have a drone or something too, that those take higher outputs, where if you have a battery that doesn't give that high output, you're not going to be able to recharge a lot of your electronics.
Yeah, that's something to definitely look into.
Yeah.
But back to the headlamps.
Yeah, right.
So I think the big feature that's an upgrade is having a battery that's headlamp that's rechargeable. And usually that's just via quick USB. So both Grace and I have that. She has the Ion, and I think I have one that's 300 lumens and it's rechargeable batteries. And the reason was for taking pictures. Mm-hmm. At night you can light up the foreground a little bit better if you have I don't remember 500 lumen light compared to 300, so I can paint a little bit better at with the night sky shots.
Yeah.
That's and another thing that I took a 1 or 2 ounce hit because of that, but it's
another,
you know, it all adds
you're
up.
Glamping over here.
I know, I really am. I'm like living large.
Yeah. Man.
One thing I did when I was in Moab that I highly recommend you try if you like playing around with photography is when I was out there with a few buddies, we had one of us had a headlamp that had a green light, and one of us had a headlamp that had a red light. And we were at one of the arches, Corona Arch in Moab, and one of us had the camera set up with the long exposure going, and the other two were basically just waving their red light and their green light at different parts of the arches.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked so cool when the photo was done.
Like with different, colors.
Light. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And then like one of them spelled out things while the other one shined the light on the arch.
Oh yeah. I think they call that like painting, right?
Light painting.
Friend,
yeah.
I have a friend, Serena, who does that really well.
Yeah. It's actually really super cool. Simple as long as you just like adjust your shutter speed. But yeah, the photos, when you do that on the arches, when you're out there, it looks so nice.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a great tip.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chance.
Oh, you're welcome.
You guys could probably nerd out way harder on photography. I have nothing to add to this conversation.
Can you leave now so we can just like have a real conversation?
You guys can go have a photography room. All right. Well, do you guys have anything else you want to add to the headlamp conversation?
No, I think just, you know, coming from the last time I looked at headlamps, maybe 2014 to now, the big game changer for me was something that I can recharge with.
Totally.
I mean, like you were saying, like I'm picking up new batteries. That stress is over.
Yeah.
I got this giant battery pack that can recharge it over and over again and never have to think about
it. Now, does it also give you the option to use double or triple A batteries, or is it only rechargeable?
It's only recharge. So the Ion has like one of those little batteries that you can't buy in stores.
Uh-huh.
Or I don't think so. The other one I have is just a rechargeable set of triple A's.
Gotcha. Okay.
But it just, you know, it just stays in the headlamp and you plug in to recharge every time.
Right. Okay, well, so if you're looking for some headlamps to check out that article. If the Ion's not included in there, I'll make sure to at least make a note of it or include it in the show notes, which is where all the good stuff always is. And Sean, I'm going to make you read. Yep.
No, you know what? I'll do it happily because this person wrote to me.
It was specifically written for you.
Literally,
and this is from Erica Spitfire Notini. I probably am butchering her last name, but she is a blogger for the Trek.
It's probably No Tiny.
There you go. Her last name is already a built-in trail name, and I respect that about her.
Well, she wrote in to me to tell me a poop story.
Can we give some context here? This is a callback to episode number 2. Where we talked a whole lot of number 2.
This could also be a callback to episode number 5, where at the end of it, you taunted me with how on episode number 6 we'd have to talk about poop again.
3 times as much 2 is 6.
Right.
Math.
Well, you get one paragraph and I'll read it.
I'll take it.
Okay. She says, I have a poop story for Chance because I am in fact female. About 3 miles south of Hot Springs on the AT, I got norovirus. So in the middle of the night, probably around 11 o'clock.
Isn't that deadly? Norovirus?
Not deadly, but can certainly ruin your day.
I'm thinking hantavirus.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that's transmitted through like mouse feces or something.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry.
So in the middle of the night, probably around 11 p.m., I was woken up by that horribly irresistible urge to go. This is one of those things where you just know it's going to be messy. There was a shelter. There was a shelter just 0.3 miles down the trail from where I camped. So, like a fool, I tried to make it to the privy. I did not make it to the privy. I don't think I even made it 20 steps. I stepped maybe 5 feet off the trail, dropped trow, and had probably the worst liquid poop ever. I did go back and clean up most of it, using and burying the rest of my teepee, but that's probably my worst poop story.
Peeing out the butt.
Erica, that sucks.
I like this. We're breaking down poop walls.
According to Scuba Steve, she's a truth reviewer.
I mean,
she didn't shit her pants, but that's pretty close.
But I just imagine by the velocity that it was coming out, she definitely got some poo on her.
Splatter.
Yeah.
Poo splatter. If you get poo splatter on your calves, I think you're in the club.
Mm-hmm. It's on you.
God.
It's on you. That's probably maybe even better.
I don't.
Thoughts?
No comment.
Can't wait for Sarah Chauncey to listen to this. It's Chauncey's mom.
Yeah, mom.
Who's hiking? Who's through hiking the AT with her in 2019?
My future through hiking mom.
I can't wait for your mom to get some crazy diarrhea story that we can talk about.
I'll show you. I have a funny. I'm so glad I took this. I have a funny video. I took a video of her telling my dad her plan to through hike the AT.
Hmm.
And it's a great exchange.
Ooh, I want to say that I want to include this in the show notes, but I think I might want to play the audio of this for the next episode.
Yes, the intro.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll happen.
I'll talk to Sarah Chauncey.
Yeah, you'll have to call Sarah.
Yeah.
I had similar. So I think I was telling you guys I don't get Giardia. So on the PCT, I didn't filter water and went then I went right to the AT and started hiking south with my friend. And I was like, ah, I'll risk it. You know what I mean? The AT has a lot more than Giardia, but we'll see. Play my cards right. Take this risk. That's really dumb. I won't do it with Grace. Hear that, Grace? I won't do that with you. So I didn't filter, and lo and behold, hit Pennsylvania and was peeing out of my butt like crazy. Couldn't hold any food down.
I mean, I feel like saying I don't get Giardia is the perfect like build-up to getting Giardia. You know?
Probably true.
Like, that's like epic foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Well, the way I knew I didn't have Giardia is when I did the Colorado Trail, the girlfriend I was dating at the time and I, she got really sick with Giardia. We both got tested. I had way more Giardia than she had, like way higher counts, but I was fine.
Huh.
So they're like, you can treat this or not. I was like, not treating it through hiking superpower. Gonna leave it.
Yeah.
And so on the AT, didn't do anything. Ended up getting cryptosporidium. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
It's like Giardia on steroids. It's a lot worse. Yeah. Wow. But anyways, I mean, there's.
Is it just an antibiotic to get rid of it?
I let it run its course, which was awful. I felt bad for my partner, Scud. She had to wait up for me several times because I just couldn't hike the mountain. I think even worse than peeing out of the butt every 10 minutes was the lack of energy, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't hold anything down.
You're
you can't
dehydrated.
Eat. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck hiking on that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And you're going through toilet paper at a crazy rate.
Yeah. Thank God there's a lot of trail towns on the AT to restock on that stuff.
And rabbits. I'll let you ponder that one.
So, you can find our podcast on iTunes.
Also, we would be very grateful for a review. You can give us any number of stars, but 5 is the best.
Oh, yeah. Give us 5 stars and then continue to tell Zach that he talks about the AT too much.
Please. I love when you guys shit talk me.
I really like reading those.
We also have a Patreon account. It's just patreon.com/backpackerradio. You guys get the chance to support us so we don't have to bring sponsors on. Although I think we're going to bring on Capital. I'm just already assuming that they're very interested in us.
Oh, they're definitely interested.
They're hot on the Cinnamon Connection.
Yeah.
And I can feel that.
Yeah.
And
they're rounding up every dollar for this podcast.
Yeah. But you guys have the opportunity to support us. So far we have a total of 0 supporters, but you know what? Everyone starts somewhere, and 0 is usually the best place to start. I could have asked. So Patreon gives you a bunch of emails about like how to game their own platform, basically. And they're like, yeah, get everyone close to you to submit for the first few podcasts. So you have the social proof of it seeming like people actually like your thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we should take out the part where we say that no one actually cares.
No, I'm leaving it in. Honesty is always the best policy. Because we've had brands reach out who want to sponsor the podcast. That's a real thing. And I've told them, no, I'd rather have it be you guys. But we might have to break down and let Trojan.
Yeah, but think about how fun it will be to slip in segues into ads.
That's true.
Like,
as long
we'll
as we can make it entertaining.
Off.
We'll have to figure out how to be entertaining.
Yeah, we'll just see the most creative ways.
More beer is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. So if you want to support us, you should. But if you don't want to, we
hate
you.
Get your ears ready for some ads.
We hate you.
we hate you.
That's fun. And social. You can follow the Trek. You can find all the Trek social stuffs on thetrek.co. We dropped the M from the .com because it was too heavy. My personal stuff is ZR Davis on Instagram and Twitter. Chaunce.
I am Juliana_Chauncey on Instagram or just Juliana Chauncey on YouTube.
Twinkle, I want you to give another plug.
Yeah, on Instagram, it's Shattuck311. I think that's Shattuck.
You think that's how you spell your last name?
I think.
It is his favorite 311 song is Amber.
Amber. Listen to it. Download it. Spread the love.
All mixed up. Don't know what to do. Next thing. We should put that song at the end. I know we don't have the rights to it, but I think if we just use a few
technically
seconds.
Technically, if it's playing in the background like a radio song, it's fine.
Really?
Yeah, as long as you don't like edit it in yourself. Like, because if something's playing on the background in the radio, you can't really control that.
Are you willing to absorb the legal fees if that's not right?
I had a professor tell me that once in college. Right.
Well, that's how I'm going to put together my YouTubes now. I'm just going to have my phone playing the song in the background.
Oh, yeah, but
it's
going to sound like shit.
It's
right.
Cool. It's
well, so we're going to definitely end this episode with a 311 song. And we're definitely going to end this episode right now. Twinkle, man, thanks so much for coming on. This is your last day back in reality, or your last day in reality before you go off to the wonderful world that is adventuring. I just want to say thank you so much for spending it with us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me, both of you.
And great. Have an awesome trip. That's going to be so fun.
Yeah. Follow him on Instagram.
And I'll definitely have Grace catch up with you guys.
Yeah, we want a Keter voice.
At least every month or so, we just want like the quick few minute rundown of how amazing, how much better your life is than all of our lives.
Yeah, tell us how crappy our lives are.
Yeah. Actually, my best friend, Guth, it's like, oh yeah, I'm unfollowing you today. Actually, I do not want to see this.
I'm gonna make that guy get on a future episode. I want to get real heavy on the CDTC.
And on that note.